Good Monday morning and welcome to Jump in Tucson. I'm your host, Dr. Ed Ackerley, and our producer is Matt Neely, who does a great job for us running the show behind the glass, as they say. Coming up tomorrow, General Ted Maxwell will be here. Wednesday, Grant Kruger from Union Public House will be the host. On Thursday, Tom Moulton will be with you, and then I return again Friday with business success stories. You know, our Monday segment, Jump in Tucson, our theme on Monday is wonder at the University of Arizona. And the reason for that is that there's a lot of discussion about all the things going on at the U of A all the time, whether it be coaching changes or budget battles or politics and so forth. When we started this program, I wanted to talk about the really good things that happen at the University of Arizona. I know that Dr. Bob Lush one time said that if you took the University of Arizona as a population, it's like the fifth or sixth largest city in the state of Arizona as an entity. And there's a lot of people that work at the U of A, a lot of people that go to school there. And there's a lot of good, wonderful, fantastic things that people are doing in their endeavors as employees and researchers and students learning good things for their careers and so forth. So the Monday program is our wonder program to highlight the good things at the University of Arizona. The program is sponsored in part by Michael Kasser of Halu'aloha Companies. And our first guest today is a friend of KVOI's and a friend of the program, Dr. Mark Stegeman from the University of Arizona. He's an associate professor of economics, and areas of expertise include microeconomic theory, game theory, and industrial organization. And Mark, before we get started talking about what we're going to talk about today, I kind of tipped you off and I said, tell me what game theory is. I asked you what game theory was, and it's listed as one of your expertise. What is game theory?
Well, game theory is a mathematical discipline invented in the late 1930s, designed to predict how people behave in strategic situations where small numbers of people are interacting with each other. Of course, those people could be countries,
right?
Firms, whatever. The early applications of it were mainly military. Mm. It was used for Cold War modeling. But by the time we got to the 1970s, it had a big impact in economics.
Right. I bet a lot of companies in the 70s and 80s were using that as a model for predicting strategic development and direction and so forth.
Oh, I think it's used quite a bit. Mm-hmm. We certainly use it a lot in my profession, but I think it has a lot of application in business and negotiation settings.
So my naivete, I thought game theory was how you're going to beat the Chiefs in the Super Bowl or something like that. But it's an actual discipline that is mathematical and powerful economic.
Well, it would have strategy. Applications. I mean, you could use game theory to study frequencies of calling different kinds of plays, or how you'd want to handle certain situations.
Well, you know, we're going to talk a little bit about an initiative that you're working on, but two things. One, I want to thank you for your service to the TUSD Governing Board over the last couple of decades. You were there and fighting the good fight for so many years. Just a brief reflection on your service to the community as a Governing Board member and trying to help orchestrate good success for the TUSD schools.
Well, I went into it thinking that I could help turn TUSD into a marvelous school district, and I don't think I succeeded in that, but I think there were certain things that we did that were good and lasting. And one thing which has some relationship to what's going on at U of A is that the board figured out that we were spending excessively on administration relative to our peer districts. We had comparative metrics from the Auditor General, so we knew that was true. But it's hard for the board to figure out how to cut administrative spending because we're not really qualified to say cut this, cut that. Mm-hmm. So after several years, I finally persuaded the board to simply put a cap on it. And we told the superintendent to move so many million dollars out of administration into instruction, and it was up to him to figure out how to do it, and they did it. And I mentioned at a faculty senate meeting to someone from ABOR that this is something ABOR could consider in running the university. that just do some comparative metrics, figure out whether U of A's administrative costs are really as high as many of us think they are. And if they are, then simply direct the president to move so much money.
Right. And by the way, I tongue-in-cheek congratulated you on your re-election to the Faculty Senate again. It was announced yesterday that you won your seat, and you said, well, I was running unopposed, so.
Yes.
Well, you still won. That means somebody, but it means you voted for yourself, or at least one person voted for you, so that's a good thing.
Well, I think there were three or four, yeah.
Yeah. But, so you've spent a lot of time in the Faculty Senate in governance from the faculty perspective, working with administration to do some great things at the U of A, and obviously, there's some challenges now. As I talked to you earlier in the week, we weren't going to talk too much about the challenges that the U of A is going through. But if you could just reflect on your time at the Faculty Senate and again, this concept that you used at TUSD Governing Board for trying to manage the resources that are available or not available and trying to balance the budget and how important that is as a faculty senator to do those kinds of things.
Well, the Faculty Senate has very little authority.
they have a big voice, though.
Well, they've recently spoken a little bit louder, but faculty governance varies from school to school.
Right.
And this is the third school I've taught at, and I think at Arizona, the faculty governance entity, the Faculty Senate, probably has less formal power than at either of the other two. It's really quite weak here.
Right.
But we do have a chance to talk with administration and make suggestions, and I think there's been a lot of that going on lately.
Yeah, I've had the good pleasure or the penance of watching some Faculty Senate meetings on the air, and you do run a good meeting. You at least know how to run a good meeting.
Well, no, I'm not, I don't run the meeting.
Yeah.
I'm the parliamentarian.
Yeah, that's what I meant. You keep people on track is what you
well,
do.
Well, I try.
Yeah.
I try, but I also have no formal authority. The parliamentarian just gets to talk.
Yeah.
And so I do my best, but
well, we're going to talk, we're going to come back in a little bit, and you know, we see each other in the hallway at the Eller College on a regular basis, and we chat about politics and government and, you know, all the things that you and I talk about when we reminisce about your days at USD and my two runs for mayor. But when we come back, I want to talk about this initiative that you're working on in terms of civics and the state and students and so forth, and maybe as an outgrowth of your time with TUSD and what would be good for the students and good for the state and for that matter for the country for us to understand those types of things. So we'll come back and we'll talk about that. Reminder that Ted Maxwell will be here tomorrow and Grant Kruger will be here Wednesday. Tom Moulton will be here on Thursday and I'll be back on Friday. This is the Monday version of Jumpin' Tucson. It's brought to you in part by Mike Kasser of Hauʻuloa Companies. And we'll be back in just a little bit to talk about a new initiative with the University of Arizona that Dr. Mark Stegeman is working on. This is Tucson's only live local news talk station, KVOI 1030 AM, The Voice. You're listening to Jump in Tucson, and we'll be back in just a few minutes. Welcome back to Jump in Tucson. This is Dr. Ed Ackerley. I'm your host. In the studio with me is my brother Bill Ackerley on this bright Monday morning. We're talking about wonder and the good things that are happening at the University of Arizona. We do that on Mondays to highlight the good things that are happening in research and people being educated and all the impact that the U of A has on the community. This segment is sponsored in part by Michael Kasser of Hauʻuloa Companies. Our guest for this segment is Dr. Mark Stegeman, the University of Arizona Associate Professor of Economics. And welcome back, Mark.
Thank you.
So let's talk a little bit about this initiative that the Board of Regents had kind of talked about and civics and general education and the initiative that that you're working on.
In 2021, the Regents amended their general education policy and gave some pretty specific direction about getting civics education into the curriculum, into the general education curriculum so that every student gets it. And they told all three universities to do that. And they had a pretty detailed list of things that they want covered in that, like basic economics, for one, although that's not the main part, but the Constitution, constitutional debates, history, founding documents.
Was this federal or state or both?
I think the language is focused on federal, but I think it's also broad. Right. And I think that's great. I think there's a lack of understanding of the Constitution, processes of government, and there's some objective data that shows that that's not just an impression, that's really true. And I don't think that helps either one. I don't think it helps either of the parties in the end or anybody. So I thought that was a good mandate. The way they worded it was not ideologically directive. In other words, it was open-ended enough that you could interpret it lots of different ways. It wasn't saying take a conservative viewpoint or something like that. And the U of A was kind of dragging its feet on this for several years, I think partly because they were doing some other things in general education. Maybe they didn't have the bandwidth. But I pushed pretty hard for it, and eventually other people were pushing too, and I think we're going to get it done. The faculty chair appointed me about, well, a little less than a year ago to head an ad hoc committee on general education, and civics was one of the things we were supposed to focus on. So we've got members from 11 different colleges working on this and trying to guide a collaborative process. And we just actually issued on Friday a report to the Senate on how issues and ideas for moving forward on civics.
Right. You know, as a teacher, instructor, faculty member at the college in my marketing classes, every once in a while the discussion of politics will come up and just the organizational structure of our federal government. And it's ironic to me or interesting to me when you ask, a class of maybe 50 or 60 students who Mike Johnson is, and they can't tell you what he does or who he is. They might have some sense of who he is because they've seen him maybe
a little bit. Plays for the Braves.
Yeah,
right?
He plays for the Braves, exactly. And to not know who the Speaker of the House is, who is, I guess, officially second in line, because the President, then the Vice President, and then, second in line, but the third person to be in line for President. And some of our residents don't even know who that is or how that process works. And, that has always been a concern to me. And even when Jay Leno would go out on the streets and around the studio in California and stop people on the street and show them a picture of somebody and ask them who the person was, and they had no idea who the person was and or what their position was or what that position did. So I don't mean to speak light of it, but I think the civics thing is really important, especially for those of us that are engaged in civic engagement, running for office and being involved in politics. It's an important part of our lives. And What types, in terms of what an undergraduate student might get in general education, would this be a class or would this be a focus, or how would that work?
Well, that's being debated. That's what we're probably going to be working out over the next few months, and there's different opinions and ideas about that. Since I'm the one lucky enough to be on your show, I'll put forward the model I think probably works the best, and right. I think some agree with me, but not everyone. And so this is a discussion we're going to have internally. But I think what I would like to see is a two-course sequence. ABOR calls it American Institutions, and they've got seven things they want covered in some way. And ASU is doing it in two courses. NAU is doing it in one course. But I'd like to do it in two courses and have a list A, a student choose one from list A, and that might be law and econ, and choose one from list B, and that might be history and some other stuff. I mean, those are arbitrary assignments. We're not nearly that far in the conversation. And then you'd get 6 credits of American Institutions and have subject area experts teach it and work pretty hard to ensure that it's a quality curriculum. I've been on the General Education Committee at U of A for 12 or 13 years, and I'm a standards guy. I'm worried about erosion of academic standards, and I'd like this to be a very strong program that could even be a model for the nation. And the last part is that we're thinking of having a 1 or 2, 3 or 4 unit practicum course where the student goes out and does an internship or writes an op-ed or does some research for somebody or does some community, government involvement in something or gets involved in a debate program. There's a whole lot of options. Or something educating K-12 kids about government. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of things they could do. And so that would be something where there's some, the regions talk about promoting civil dialogue, civil discourse, civic engagement. And so this practicum course would be the vehicle for making that happen.
I'd be an advocate just to throw another option into the what the students sure. could choose would be a shadow experience where they picked up maybe 4, 5, or 6 different places that they went. Maybe they followed a TUSD governing board member for a day. They go to a mayor's office and watch what happens in the mayor's office. They go to a chief deputy treasurer of the county and watch, or just go to a political party or some other place and just observe what's going on in those experiences. I often tell my students at the marketing department that, you don't have school on Fridays. Go make it part of your curriculum. Go find 5 or 6 or 8 places over the next couple of weeks and go see what it's like and just ask them if you can be part of the experience for a little bit. So I would think that would be another option for students.
And then maybe write something about it. Well, right. that actually, with all the ideas that have come forward, you're the first person that suggested that specific thing. But one of the reasons I've been, and this idea has quite a few advocates, that I think it would be great is that if we throw it open to the whole university, people will have all kinds of ideas that we would have never thought of, or central administration would have never thought of. So just, throw it open to the academic marketplace.
Right. What would the funding source be for this? It would just be included in the general education experience, and so it'd be part of that. When you come to the U of A, you have to get your prereqs in and everything. It would be part of that experience?
Yeah, it would be fun. Well, one of the problems we have now is no one knows what the funding model is.
Right.
Right. And so they've, at this point, at ABOR's request.
Which is another whole show about the.
Oh, boy. In some sense, there's not much to say about it because nobody knows what's going to happen. We're searching for a provost. Something will happen there. Something might happen with senior leadership at some point.
Right.
And every time top leadership changes, the funding model could change.
Right.
So I think we don't know exactly how the funding's going to work, but we've always had a general ed program. This isn't like a new thing, and it'll be funded one way or another.
Would this add a unit or two to the students' overall total units, or would this replace something else? And again, that probably could be discussed.
Well, it might be a little bit of both.
Yeah.
The whole general education program at all three universities has been going through changes, partly at ABOR's request. So U of A right now is in a different gen ed program than it was 5 years ago. And that mean nothing to do with civics, just they changed the whole program.
Right.
And the new program has fewer units in it than the old program. And so one place we might be able to fund civics credit-wise is to get back some of those units and get back to where the old program was.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's some other things we could do. But yes, one of the questions in implementing this is where are you going to get the units? And the model I'm talking about is basically 7 units, 2-3 unit courses on this 1 unit minimum practicum. But I think it's doable.
Yeah.
We'll just have to talk about it.
Well, I think it's so important. I concur with you that civics is an important discussion that all of us as participants in the democracy and in the capitalist system and the economic system that we have, we need to know civics, and it's an integral part of our lives, even though sometimes we don't admit it. Being engaged in the process is part of it. So if we can teach some students how to do that, that's a really powerful thing to do. So thank you, Mark, for all you do for the Faculty Senate and what you do at the Eller College and what you do, more importantly, for students along the way and what you did, obviously, at TUSD to try to point them in the direction that is good outcomes for everyone. So you're an example, Mark, of the good things that are going on at the University of Arizona.
Well, I hope so.
You definitely are. You're listening to Jump in Tucson, and we'll be back with the second half with Dr. Luigi Pecorora, who is the Eller Executive Education Director. You're listening to Jump in Tucson on KVOI. Welcome back to Jump in Tucson. This is the Monday edition, the Wonder at the University of Arizona. This program is sponsored in part by Michael Kasser of Halu'aloha Companies. I want to thank Dr. Mark Stegeman from U of A Eller College to the discussion on civics and what undergraduate education might be. So we go from undergraduate education to executive education. Our guest for this segment is Dr. Luigi Pecoraro, and he is the executive director of the Eller Education Department. Welcome to Jump in Tucson, and welcome to Tucson.
Thank you.
So,
good to be here.
Let's talk a little bit about your journey of what brought you to the University of Arizona and your experience in executive education in Texas, and what brought you here on that journey.
Sure. So my career has been primarily in the area of training and development. I started that journey with a master's in adult education and training back in the 90s. Mm-hmm. So I've always been, first of all, I was influenced by the good Jesuits who are big educators around the world. Mm-hmm. So I took a liking to the work of education. I like working with people. I had a sense or a knack that I could help people learn skills that they needed. I was a quick study, a quick learner myself, and I appreciated education. So with that, I pursued adult education. I felt that being in an environment where people wanted to learn would be a good environment as opposed, say, to elementary or secondary school where it's a little more... perhaps say forced on mm-hmm. you have to be there, right?
Right.
Where I wanted to be in a place where people were choosing to come to learn. So with that began the journey of specifically I chose to direct that study into human resource development and corporate training. And thus began the journey by working in a healthcare environment with supervisory training, and then moving into more management development and management consulting, representing training companies with their products and services, and eventually broadening even into some executive coaching of managers and leaders. There was a turning point there in the great financial crisis of 2008 to 2010.
Yes.
Where I felt maybe a little more stability in my career. Might be a good idea. I had 6 children at that point.
Wow.
Ed.
Wow.
And
a good Italian family, right?
Yeah, good Italian family.
Yeah.
That's right. Mm-hmm. So I looked at higher ed and didn't know where I necessarily could take my career there, but I discovered that my background would fit, that there was opportunities for coaching MBA students and doing leadership development with graduate students, and so I pursued that, and that's the path I've been on since 2008. Initially working with my alma mater, and then Illinois Institute of Technology, in a graduate business school environment, coaching graduate students on their career development, on leadership development, and helping them to pursue their dreams. And then an opportunity opened up to go back to my hometown, Cleveland, and work at Case Western Reserve University in their executive education department. The Weatherhead School of Management, I had actually taken an executive education course
right. In
2005. So that class was, it was the first time I'd ever experienced executive education. And it was an amazing class. It was an amazing professor that taught that class. I had gotten a lot out of it. So... having that had that familiarity, I knew what it was about, and it was a colleague of mine that was working there that referred me, and it just dawned on me, and I realized that I could bring a lot of my skills and my background to executive education, my training and development background, my coaching, my work, and I could bring it all together in one place. So I obviously applied for that job, and I got the job in 2013. And, that's the road I've been on for the last 10 years, is really focused on leadership development with executives, primarily about director level and up, all the way to C-suite in major corporations, designing and developing experiences that help them to reflect on their strengths, areas of development, improve how they lead, how they manage in business,
And I like to say that kind of the three areas we focus on is their ability to lead, their ability to engage employees more effectively, and get better business results.
Well, it's kind of fun. You know, we had lunch the other day talking about this process, and it sure is neat to do business coaching and, and executive coaching and seeing the results of that. I even got some business coaching and leadership training coaching, and that is an amazing process. Even those of us that have been around for a while, we can still use some training and some updating. And you and I were talking about some of the theorists that have studied leadership and studied this training. It's an important thing for executives in the C-suite to keep the sharpen the saw, as Stephen Covey says.
Yes, and the trend has grown tremendously over the last 10 years. More and more executives do have executive coaches, and the investments in leadership development have grown. The executive education business is about $60 billion today, and it's projected to grow to $100 billion.
So one of our good friends, Suzanne McFarlane, who is she's with Step Up Leaders. She's a consultant and a coach and a business coach and a executive trainer. And she presents to my classes at the Elder College as well on leadership. And it's really cool to listen to the stories that she tells about most people would look at a executive who's in the C-suite or running a company, a major company, having all the answers and having all the focus and so forth. That's not necessarily true. They still need some backup support when they're working on their projects.
Yeah, it's not that they're not competent or capable. There's a dynamic within leadership called leadership follower context. So as a leader, you're in a dynamic where you have a set of followers and you're a certain context, and you may grow to be very effective with a certain set of followers in a certain context, right? But when you shift or move to a new set of followers in a new context, you may not adapt or adjust to that environment as effectively as you did in the last one, and therefore struggle for some reason. And it could be the nature of the followers. It could be the nature of the context. So there's never, you know, you can never stay static and go into remote control. You've always got to be thinking and acting and reading the situations and making decisions. And sometimes it becomes very challenging and you need to get perspective.
Yeah, I'm certainly one of the major theories of leadership theory is situational leadership.
Right. And that would fit with what I'm saying.
Yeah, certainly coming into these settings and having to, buck the culture and the trends from the past, but look to the future with a new vision and a new understanding of where the organization might want to go. This takes some skill and some training and some opening up of your mind or getting some new ideas, right?
That's what we call change management in the industry, and the ability to set a vision and get buy-in from the folks around you to head toward that vision when they might just think things are fine.
Yeah, we talked about Kuzes and Posner and their five steps and how important those things are. The one that I like of the five is encouraging the heart.
Yes,
and how leaders have to be empathetic and be excited about the mission that they're on and passionate about driving that organization to success.
Yeah, so I mentioned I was at Weatherhead for almost 5 years, and then I completed my doctorate. And there we used to use, the research and the work we used to use there was a lot around emotional intelligence. But when I went to SMU, they were more in the habit of using the five practices.
Right.
And the 30 behaviors that go with that. We got a lot of mileage out of that model because we were working with many companies that hadn't done leadership development before or didn't really have a competency model, which is how more sophisticated companies might approach it. And so that's just a great model. It's a simple model to grasp, five general practices and behaviors that are associated with it to really grasp what exemplary leadership looks like.
And it's appropriate that the University of Arizona and the Elder College specifically is working on executive education because, as I say, the university is the elephant in the room. It's the largest entity in the city, and it employs a tremendous amount of people. And the organizations and businesses, we have more nonprofits per capita in Tucson than any other place in the universe, I guess. Yeah. And it's good to have some executive education training. So when we come back, let's talk a little bit about what you have planned for the executive education department.
Sure.
And we're talking with Dr. Luigi Pecoraro, executive director of the Eller Executive Education Program at the Eller College at the University of Arizona. You're listening to Jump in Tucson, the Monday Wonder Edition, sponsored in part by Michael Kasser of Halua Loa Companies. Welcome back to Jump in Tucson. This is Ed Ackerley, your host. The Monday Wonder Program is sponsored by Michael Kasser of Halua Loa Companies and celebrates the good things going on at the University of Arizona. Our guest today is Dr. Luigi Pecoraro, executive director of the Eller Education Project at the University of Arizona and the Eller College of Management. I tried to do that with an Italian flair. I'm not sure bello, I did it right.
Bello.
Okay. So you made it to Tucson. You took over the executive education program. Tell us a little bit about the program itself, and then we'll talk about the plans for what you have in store.
Yeah, sure. So great opportunity for me to come here. I like to say that after, you know, it was about 8-9 years between Weatherhead and SMU that I think I know the playbook. Mm-hmm. I think I understand what the mission and purpose of Exec Ed is, and I've done well in it. And so I was really looking for an opportunity to captain the ship, if you will, and bring all the things I'd learned that were good and learned that were not so good in the business and try to help an organization build out its executive education program. And what I liked about this particular opportunity is that it, in a way, it mirrors kind of a small business environment, which I'm very comfortable in. It was new in the sense that it's a public university. I've been in private universities before, but a good brand, Eller. The executive education had come off of a good seven-year run with the previous director of building up its brand, securing good contracts with brand name companies, and it fits within the vision of both the university and the other college. And so what I think Exec Ed stands for, first and foremost, is the notion that beyond your degree, you don't stop learning. Mm-hmm. That as a professional, you're a lifelong learner. And executive education can provide that education in real time, in the workplace, when you need it and where you need it. That's really what we're here for, to be a resource to the working professionals that are out there who may need to skill up specifically if maybe they're changing roles or jobs, who may need to build a stronger team, executive team or functional team, who may need to just get smarter around strategy or finance, or who understand that leadership is a process and want to get better and want to go through an evaluative process of maybe a 360, learn some new ideas, and get some coaching. We can put that package together. So we have a variety of ways to help companies work with their executives on that lifelong learning journey.
It's appropriate that this is out of the Eller College because, of course, our friend Carl Eller, who has passed away, what is the namesake for the college, he was an executive at, of course, at his own companies, Eller Media Company and Eller Outdoor, but he also ran a movie company and a Circle K. He ran the Circle K organization, and he was all about continuing education and getting the undergraduates through the process, getting them maybe a master's degree, but also as they moved into the business world to come back to the U of A. Mm-hmm. And take advantage of the resources that we have at the Eller College. So you've got quite a few instructors and faculty members who are able to share the curriculum and leadership and so forth. So that process is underway right now of kind of realigning that and bringing in some more into the stable.
Yeah, I think anytime that you can strengthen your bench, provide more offerings across the spectrum of your disciplines and your capabilities, that just, allows you to go to market with greater strength to capture more business. So that's the process we're going through right now, is just taking a full inventory of what we have to offer, who can offer it, and that way, as we strengthen our marketing and our outreach, people will begin to see more clearly what we can do for them.
So if I was listening and I was an individual, maybe a professional or something that wanted some individual training, but if I was in the C-suite or head of a company in Southern Arizona and wanted to take advantage, or for that matter, across the country to come to Tucson and get some executive training, what would they do? What would the process be for someone that would be interested in talking with you and your department about what they could do in terms of strengthening their bench and doing the things that they need to do for their teams?
Yeah, so we have business development professionals, my colleague Laurel Ragler and myself, who they could reach out to, particularly if they want to do something in-house. We have a couple of program coordinators, Teresa Lambert and Catherine Lucero, who could inform them about some of our open enrollment programs. So really two paths they could go down. And the general thinking there is, maybe I just have a few people who I want to send to something to skill them up. And the value there is they get the benefit of being with a variety of people from a variety of functions in industry. So the open enrollment programs are beneficial in that way, that they get to experience kind of a wider frame from various industries. And we have targeted programs for different topical areas. However, if they really want to do something in-house, where a big part of the benefit of doing something in-house is that you can build stronger relationships with your team, have people communicate across functions, learn together, maybe do a project together. What I've seen over the last 10 years is by far half the benefit is just that experience of being together. You don't take the time like that and spend it together in a learning environment outside your organization, building relationships. And what I hear time and time again is, now I know I can call on so-and-so, that I didn't know before to help me in the business. And this will be a wonderful lasting relationship. So they learn as much from each other as they do from the instructor in those kinds of what we call cohort experiences. And so typically you're going to want to have at least, say, 15 people that you're going to want to put through a tailored program like that. And we'll build it and design it to whatever specs they want. And really the criteria comes down to how much money and time can you invest?
Right.
And, I would say if you're thinking about something like that, depending on director to executive, I would say an average spend is probably $7,000 a person for a director, maybe $10,000 for a VP, and maybe $15,000 for a C-suite.
Well, that's great. And this is a great example of the resources at the U of A, helping out the community that we live in, and being an outreach to the businesses that might need some executive training. So we appreciate what you do for the community, and welcome.
Appreciate it.
Dr. Luigi Pecoraro, the Executive Director of Eller Executive Education. We'd like to thank everyone for listening. If you'd like to be interviewed on Jump in Tucson, give us a shout. This is Jump in Tucson on KVOI 1030 AM The Voice. Thanks for listening.